I am really curious about the Winston Churchill statement and your perspective on it, where you showed that slide that said a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on. I'm wondering if Brad was going to rephrase that today for the social age where media flies so much faster, how do you think that could be rephrased?
Tell the truth from the get-go. I think with social media, you know, whereas 10 years ago, you could probably have an incident happen at a company and you could buy yourself some time. You can't buy time anymore. I mean, employees, stakeholders of various sorts, within seconds, whatever happens can get out there. So tell the truth from the get-go.
Now, why do you think some companies and agencies work for them have a hard time doing just that?
It could be layers of bureaucracy inside the company. It could be outdated plans that they have in place. It could be a variety of things.
From that, I liked when you had presented at the Triangle Marketing Club on crisis management. It's like one of those things that seems to be that companies don't really want to deal with until they absolutely have to deal with it, kind of like an attorney.
or buying a car. I mean, you never want to go do that, but you have to deal with it at some point. And I think, you know, human nature is a tendency to put off discussing bad things that could occur. I think that's basic human nature. We want to focus on the good things. But I think by neglecting what could happen, you're putting yourself and your company at a disadvantage.
I think we've seen a lot of cases that happened recently.
Sure.
And what I really liked is how you were showing how PR and social really should converge. They should understand what they're doing. And I liked what you were talking about. Hey, consider having some pre-recorded videos about when that situation happened. Not to be the be-all and end-all,
right,
but as a means of, like you're saying, is to build trust with an audience, do something right away, even if you can't explain the whole situation right, or just acknowledge them and show what you're doing. Have you had any feedback from clients when you try to propose this to them?
I think given the amount of crises that have popped up recently in the past couple of years, of course, social media only exposes it more. I think people are more open to looking at their crisis plans and reviewing it more so than in the past. You know, one of the things I mentioned at the talk was this phrase, trust takes time to build. Every second you wait to respond when a crisis hits magnifies the erosion of it. And I think that's very telling. I mean, if you have an incident happen and you wait, let's say, 4 or 5 hours to address whatever that issue was that happened, you're just asking for more questions from the media. You're asking more questions from your stakeholders, and you're raising distrust among both, which is never good.
What I found is that companies will talk to their agencies and say, there's this bad thing happening on social media, or sometimes it even happens in online reviews.
Right.
And their attitude might be the old attitude, well, can't you just make this go away?
Sure.
Without understanding that where every individual can be a content creator, every individual can be an influencer. It's more egalitarian, but also it can present problems for misinformation coming out. And when you brought up just now talking about how trust takes time to build, but every second you take can erode that trust, it's what you're really saying is this is now the time from the beginning to build the relationships.
Yes.
And relationships take time. And what's interesting is that seems to be more understood on the PR side than it is on the social side. Built, you know, following these influencers, like journalists are active on Twitter. It amazes
right.
me that people in the PR space will do the cold calls, but they won't follow these same journalists in the social space.
I think we are seeing a shift in that, though. Mm-hmm. I think the good PR professionals are following those individuals not only on Twitter, but Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, you name it. I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes down to stories and what's a good story. And you have to know the behaviors of those that you're trying to pitch to. So if you've got this great story that you want to land in the New York Times or CBS Morning News or what have you, I would argue that just sending an email is very outdated.
I would concur with that from my own experience of having worked as a regular columnist contributor for a publication that happened to specialize in video marketing, and I would get the vast majority of my pitches would be from companies that never built a relationship, never followed what I was doing beforehand, sometimes didn't even really pay attention to what the publication was about.
Well, and let's take that a step further. You know, working in news as long as I did, I can guarantee you that on an average day, whether it's a producer, an assignment editor, news director, reporter, they can get anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 emails a day. The print journalists, probably about the same. Radio newsrooms, probably about the same as well. And you have to be very targeted in how you pitch stories these days from a PR standpoint, from a social standpoint. You can't waste time. And I would argue that if you're getting 2,000 emails a day, it's hard to break through that clutter. So relationships truly do matter.
To that point, what you made me think of when you're trying to stand out from all the noise, I thought of video pitches. And I remember the few times where I might have sent someone a video so that they could see me. So it's the idea of what you talked about, empathy. And digital empathy is a hard thing for people to do. I would think people who are journalists and natural storytellers would very much understand that. Mm-hmm. I find a lot of PR people who you would think would know to do that don't do that. And your experience is probably a lot more widespread than mine. I found a lot still do the call, the email, without thinking of, but what could stand out a little better?
Well, and more so than that, I think it's making the journalist's job easier. So if I have let's say we go back 10 years. You're in a newsroom and you get a press release that's sent to you in the newsroom. And you go, okay, we got this press release. What do we want to do with it? And this is before Twitter, Facebook, the push for web content like it is today. You would take that press release and maybe, you know, put a snippet of it on the 5 or 6 o'clock news, 11 o'clock news, depending on the content of that. Today, again, you got 2,000, 3,000 emails, plus all those other channels that you have to worry about in a newsroom. If I were to send a press release, I would send a press release. I would send pictures with that press release. If there's a video that I could send with it as well, I would send video with it as well. I'd make it as easy as possible, so all they have to do is, oh, everything's here. Great, let's toss it up. Boom, done. As opposed to, oh, now I've got to call this person for a picture, or now I've got to call for a video. If you make it as simple as possible, you increase your chances of getting coverage.
What you're basically advocating is for being like a prep cook and having a media kit, a digital media kit, and an easy way for reviewing.
Again, knowing that time is sensitive in newsrooms and the pressures that are upon the individuals in these newsrooms, if you're making it as simple as possible, you're going to have a better chance for success for your client.
It seems like being sympathetic or empathetic to the person on the other side is being respectful of their time. What I could also advocate, absolutely, if you did have a video, is don't make it a really long video. Get to the point.
No, I think if you're going to send a video with a press release or a pitch, 30 seconds or less. Make it as long as it gets the point across. Now, if you're offering B-roll, which is video to cover up a story, you can do a direct link to that where they can download that from a press conference or what have you. But again, time is of the essence. Make it short, sweet. And, you know, again, taking a step further, if you know that person that you're sending the pitch to, you have a much greater chance of success. And again, that goes back to building relationships. It's one thing to do it from a keyboard. It's another thing to actually take the effort to go over there and get to know them.
You know, from all this we're talking about here, trust, empathy, building relationships, and how we can communicate better when, while we both have the reach and the amplification, we also have limitations. Like you and I were face-to-face here.
Sure.
In fact, I always request that of someone because I feel I can do a much better interview that way. But most of our communication is not getting those social cues, hearing tone, nuance on text. I mean, it might just, especially if it's in text.
Right.
You know, who knows how many distractions you're dealing with. My question from all of that is, does this mean that PR folks, maybe from what you're saying, is need to accept they have to put a little more time in rather than going a mile wide and an inch deep and going all the way across the landscape and seeing who will bite?
Yeah, absolutely. Instead of just tossing out, you know, a massive pitch to 2,000 journalists, if there's a core group of 30 that you know very well and you've made relationships with over the years, again, you'll have a greater chance of success. You know, I'm old school, and maybe that's good or bad, but I'm going to take that extra time to try and get to know somebody. More so, you know, let's say there's a story that I'm aware of that has nothing to do with my clients, but it's a good story. I may go tell one of these journalists, hey, there's a good story here, just thought you should know, and not expect anything in return. I'm just looking out for them, which, again, is kind of old school. You want to take care of those people who take care of you.
You know, I always find it's interesting when we now get in the area of CRM, customer relationship mm-hmm. management, if those little do-good things, you know, naturally because you're thinking about someone, are things that you could actually even quantify in a way? Or do you think even now it seems like you're talking about, hey, people on the PR side now even be thinking about this as like social selling, which is what really what they're doing. And I absolutely get as you're finding something in common, it's a natural part of who you are. You feel like, hey, this is a value and karma will go around eventually, even if nothing comes out of it in terms of a business, but that you're on top of mind and you're just helping people out because you feel you'll get helped out.
Well, yeah. And, you know, whether it's, you know, 3 weeks or 5 years down the road, a journalist or somebody in the social space won't forget that you took time out of your day to hand them something that you thought might benefit them. And the fact that you're not asking for anything in return really goes a long way. I mean, last week I sent a tip to a friend of mine outside of the state, and you know, he wrote me a note day later saying, look, you didn't have to do this, but thanks so much. You know, next time you're back in town, let's get together, have dinner, what have you. Again, it goes a long way.
It seems to me that there's a convergence. I've heard several people in the social business space saying is that the org chart and the job description isn't necessarily going to be as important as the ability to be multifaceted, to understand how, if you are a PR person, to understand when it is good to do social and everybody could be doing it, you know, with guidelines and a bit of governance here and there, and also knowing that, hey, when to be doing that kind of social selling. So they're doing a little bit of each other's jobs while they still have their specialties.
Right.
Then again, I've also seen the other side with certain PR companies where it's the wear many hats, where the PR person is also expected to be the account manager. And because of that, they don't necessarily have the bandwidth to be focusing on what their specialties are. And my question is, have you seen more of one or the other, and how do you think companies need to adapt?
I think we have seen a shift to companies, you know, allowing their employees to wear different hats. But I would argue that it's happening everywhere. That's not just in PR. It's not just in social. It's in newsrooms. It's in corporations. We're expected to do more with a less amount of time. I think the good ones, the good companies, like the one I work for, plays up to our strengths, each individual strengths, and works together as a team. But, all right, well, Brad's got this. He's good at this. Let's let him handle this. Let's bring him in for that. I think those are the companies that are going to thrive, as opposed to, all right, everybody wear 1,000 hats.
So what we're also talking about is good communication. People know what each other's specialties are. I'm interested in, like, a company like yours is how you keep up this good communication. I mean, you have your office here. There are other offices here. Do you find the importance in having meetings either on a regular basis, like, hey, it's Tuesday morning, it's what we normally do to keep what's up, or do you find it's just more fluid on as needed based on going the flow?
So I can tell you from my team, the team that I manage, we meet probably three times a week. It's just informal. Just kind of, we'll hop in my office, let's walk through all the accounts, you know, what are the priorities today, what are the priorities this week, how are we measuring up this week with those priorities. And I think on top of that is the trust that I have between my employees. Even though we talk three times a week, we talk more than that, obviously, as things arise. But I trust them to kind of, you know, we've mapped everything out, let's go execute. And as that execution continues and we're delivering solid results for our clients, you know, that trust grows and grows and grows. But I don't think you can get rid of the non-communication. You've got to communicate as much as possible, especially in our business. And, you know, especially with social media, things are going to rise out of the blue when you least expect it, right? So as long as everybody's on the same page, when that incident or whatever arises, you'll be ready to tackle it.
Do you have your own ideas of how PR and social can work together? I've heard certain PR heads say, hey, social should be in the domain of PR because people in PR might be closer to the accounts, might be closer to the message. What are your thoughts?
I think that's a valid thought. I think PR, especially as we're all kind of converging through different mediums and social outlets, I think it all comes down again to the messaging, the content? What is that story behind that message? And how are you delivering that? Which I think, you know, social can help with the execution, but if there's no true agreed upon guidance for the messaging and that content, you're just tossing it out into the wilderness. I think having that behind it makes it much more effective. You know, one of the things we talked about in the crisis communication speech was, you know, I believe the question came up, do you think it's advisable to have a PR person, you know, in a social setting when a crisis happens? Absolutely. That person's intricately involved on the agreed upon messaging before that crisis happened, or probably helped put that crisis plan together. If you would do it for a moment like that, why wouldn't you do it in day-to-day execution of your social media?
Seems like it makes the argument for cross-training.
It does. And I think to bounce off that, one of the things I think would be great as we move forward, and not just from a PR perspective, but from a social perspective, when we're talking about reaching out to journalists, when we're talking to reaching out to different mediums, I would challenge those, you know, find a colleague, find a friend who would let you in for a couple of hours to a newsroom and just watch and what goes on behind the scenes. You will have a renewed perspective of how you should approach journalists and just basic communication in this day and age. It's nuts.
Seems like shadowing is something that so many companies should have people do. Sometimes even try their role for a week. And I've been at companies where they do a pretty good job of that. It gives that sense, if we talk about empathy, is when you put yourself in the other person's shoes, you really get what they're trying to deal with.
No, agreed.
On crisis communications, and I really loved your tip on video and social and having a PR person, do you think about, with how much more video is being done and how there's Facebook Live, YouTube is now probably going to counter that and do their own YouTube Live program, obviously Snapchat, Periscope, and certain companies are using that around customer care, but they're also using it around PR for the sense sometimes having somebody, when there's a press release, be available to answer questions at certain times, even now to the point of almost like a talk show format. Do you have ideas or where you think this is going to be going and how PR people might need to include in their own offerings or solutions for their clients with video?
Again, I think it depends on the event. What's the story? I mean, that's going to dictate what you do. So if it's a major event or let's say a groundbreaking or a job announcement, I'll just use those, where you can actually do a Facebook Live showing that announcement and then a quick Q&A afterwards with the CEO, then yes, I think you should think of that. If it's a run-of-the-mill press release about, you know, whatever, then no. I think, again, the story dictates the execution.
Probably when you have your calendar in place, what you know it's going to be happening. This is, and I like the analogy, prep cook.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, so you've done at least 75% of the work, so you're not a bunch of chickens with your heads cut off.
Right.
When the time comes to actually do something. People know their role, they know what's involved, they have their own process.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think, you know, whether that's for a crisis PR scenario or a general PR scenario, if you've done the legwork ahead of time, you know, your chances of poor execution are pretty slim. Because you've thought through those scenarios.
Well, I love this interview. And now for the final part. This is the fun part. Not the other part has been fun. This is the Super Socialize Me 5 fun, quick questions. I do this with every guest.
All right.
I know you haven't heard these.
No. Nope.
But this gets into the truly social side of Brad.
All right.
So, Brad, what would you say is your personal social style?
Cautious. You know, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook quite regularly. But I choose carefully what to post. You know, most of my profiles are private, but even then, I guess because of my old news background, you know, what is really newsworthy or what would other people find interesting? You know, so whereas 5-10 years ago, I'm watching an LSU football game, let me just toss up my real thoughts on there. Probably not a good idea. So I'd probably say cautious, but I enjoy Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, the first thing I do when I get up in the morning is grab a cup of coffee, load up my Twitter, and review what I missed while I was asleep.
Yes, it was not. You know well enough that there's a downside to being like a Leslie Jones, yes. In the case with who you might get as trolls. But at the same time, it's like you practice mindfulness. You think before you post.
And I think you have to in this day and age. I mean, one rogue post, you know, whether that's for a company, whether that's an individual who works for that company, could end up in the wrong hands.
Yeah, things can be taken out of context.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about the texting, the sometimes we don't get the tone that comes across in the text. And there's a great Key and Peele sketch about that I hope you don't post, because it's it's probably not it's not safe for work. But
that's okay. I'm an adult audience.
Yeah. No. But I think, you know, that can be lost in, you know, a Twitter post or a Facebook post, just like it would be for a text that comes to your phone.
Key and Peele also did a great Skype skit over the terrible bandwidth connection.
Yes, I saw that.
So even with video, when people say, well, isn't video the best thing? I say, well, that really depends on your bandwidth. And right. Even then, people can be terrible with how they come across in video.
Absolutely.
I mean, netiquette is a really good thing for all these places, because they just assume the technology will do it for them and they forget to be a human being.
No, agreed.
Now, question two. Do you have a social beef, like something that you really see? Like when you're out, when you're using, call them social media, social technologies, and trying to be social, that really just seems to bug you personally.
Besides Morgan Freeman dying every other month.
I think Sylvester Stallone is the latest person.
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone, Betty White. I think the thing that bugs me the most now is how quickly things are taken out of context from news organizations or those that pretend or want to be a news organization. You know, for instance, if you look at the tropical developments that we've had in the past couple of weeks in the Atlantic, there have been some, you know, quasi, you know, hobbyist, if you will, on Twitter who, you know, wrote headlines, you know, Hermine is going to destroy, you know, New York and Boston. That couldn't be farther from the truth. Would they have some erosion issues? Absolutely. But taking that extreme view and with the goal of getting more clicks or more likes, that bugs me.
It seems like this happens in politics too, where it's a program to seed misinformation out through lower channels. And then when enough people are talking about it, even going in groups, and now because by the fact that it's the frequency of hearing right. These things, other people believe it. In fact, I even remember the book by Ryan Holiday, Trust Me, I'm Lying,
yes.
And saying how this is a marketing tactic.
Well, and I think the scary thing is, you know, we live in a day and age, and whether we're talking about elections, whether we're talking about news or quasi-news, that a lot of times, you know, if a story comes out, you don't know what to believe. So you're going to take that extra three or four steps to try and find that root source. Is it a credible source? But so many instances, especially in the past 10 years, I mean, how many times have we learned of legitimate news organizations, you know, hearing rumor and posting it up as fact, only to retract that 2 hours later, which I think, again, causes more confusion. So as opposed to 30 years ago, when you would watch the evening news and you could pretty much bank whatever was said during that evening news was probably 99% fact-driven. Now you wake up and look at your phone, just go, oh, I don't know if I should believe that. I don't know. Let me go do some research on that.
It's not like people are going to accept, hey, I will only accept this time for the news. So right. I'm allowing people a full 23 and a half hours to get the story right.
Right.
People are impulsive. I mean, I call it the virtual ADD environment as someone who has it.
But with that is what's lost to me is trust. You don't know what to believe. And that's not a good place to be in as a society.
It says something about human nature when they're more interested in consumption than sometimes in building relationships, but we'll complain about the relationship. And this goes back to people would rather complain about something not being great quality and get it for free
right.
than value that.
Sure.
And that's, of course, the challenge. And that's where you have native advertising. That's where you can play on people from the technology. And that's a whole other area. Which probably relates to question three.
Okay.
Brad, if you could have one social superpower, what would it be and how would you use it?
If I could have one social superpower, would it be to be accurate 100% of the time? Hmm. Whatever was tweeted or Facebooked from, you know, my account or a client's account, you could always bank on it. That was the truth.
Super accuracy, man. I always wonder when even facts now are subjective.
Yeah, one of my old news mentors had this great banner in the newsroom that, you know, I think has been lost over the years. But back then it meant something, and it was accuracy over speed. You know, there's so many times people are the, you know, I will be the first to retweet this, the first to like this, or the first to post this. But is it accurate? And I think that's been lost. So if I had my one superpower, it would be to be accurate.
I think, to the good folks, is to be accurate with empathy.
Yeah.
Because you can say information, but it can come across as cold. But if you're acknowledging a person's feelings, and that's tough, of course.
Sure.
I mean, we're talking about more one-to-one or more who your audience is. Then it seems to be like, how do you win people over? And again, it's a long game. Question four, if you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing?
That's a good question. I worked in news for years in news management, then left to do PR, which I really enjoy. If I actually had a chance and could do it and a realistic shot, I would love to be a cast member on SNL. That's really about it. I enjoy the job I have. I love the people I work with. I enjoy driving in every morning. So this is kind of my dream job, if you will. It's a perfect blend, perfect fit all across the board. But, you know, I would say the SNL thing has always been interesting to me. Growing up watching Dana Carvey and Aykroyd and Chris Farley and Will Ferrell.
I thought you were going to say something about Weekend Update. To me, that would seem like the fit, wouldn't it? Or Daily Show.
Well, you know, but I think at the core, you know, just I think a lot of people deal with things in different ways. And my way traditionally has been with humor. So, yeah, I think that would be it.
It's interesting. We just returned from Chicago where we saw Second City doing their latest skit show, Unelectable. And I can truly appreciate, as someone who worked at a comedy club for a year, to be able to perform in front of an audience, but also to be able to perform with a good team to respond in a way with humor.
Well, and think about it too, especially your folks at Second City. I mean, they're doing it day in, day out. They're having to basically go on the fly half the time with their improv. And I think what fascinates me about something like that is the ability to adjust on the fly and then hear the reaction. You know, was it a good improv that I did tonight? Was it poor? Was it? I think those tweaks would only make you a better comedian. So that's the side that fascinates me.
And very last question for the day, so
I'm
we can
enjoy
your task, is can you think of one thing that I didn't ask you that you'd really like to share or give your point of view in a minute? That you're really passionate about.
So what am I passionate about? It would be crisis and general PR planning and execution. I think so many times, you know, an incident arises. We walk through that incident, whether it's general PR or crisis PR, and we just say, okay, that's over. Let's move on. I would argue that from a company's perspective, you probably need to look at your crisis plan twice a year, evaluate yourself to your competitors. And from a general PR side, you know, how are we holding up? What is that measure of success for us? And are we executing properly against that agreed upon measure? That's what I'm passionate about.
I wonder when you convince, you know, stakeholders of this,
right,
speaking their language to say, if we do this now, do you have to speak in the language of ROI? If there's a financial officer involved on the other side, do you have to do storytelling? If it might be somebody who is more on the ideas of how they want to visualize this. This all gets to how you can communicate and persuade someone else or what you know is important, but sometimes people can't necessarily see that until it hits the fan.
So from a crisis perspective, I think you would showcase some of their competitors. These are the issues that they've had. You know, how are you guys prepared for this? Or if it's a specific medium, you know, whether that's Twitter or Facebook, that they've had problems with, you know, have you guys thought this through should something arise? That normally will grab people's attention. From a general public relations standpoint, if you've got that great story and everybody agrees that it's a great story and you think that could go far, What is the execution? What do you think the ROI might be? Can you ever guarantee it? No. But again, if you've got that solid story and you can execute and you've shown that you can execute similar stories in the past, that's when you get the buy-in.
That's where the journalism side comes, how to be an excellent storyteller, and now you're translating it to business value. Well understood that this is, it's an investment. It's a, if you treat it as a portfolio on the client side, it's one of those long-term investments. I call it relationships that convert.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Brad, I've really enjoyed this interview. Learned a lot. I always seem to learn a lot more on the PR side and how it relates to social from talking to. I always wonder when I say the word experts, because to me, an expert is somebody who might be able to fix one model of a car, but when a new model of a car comes out, new stuff is more like a, you know, a real pro. And the personal side as well as professional side really shows up, or as I call it, the professional side. So Brad, thank you so much. And thank you for super socializing me.
No, listen, thank you for having me on. Truly appreciate it.